Blog Talk Radio.
You are tuned in to Paranormal Horizons with your hosts, Jason Ophir and Sherry Pang. Stay tuned as we enter the world of the unknown. There is a silent, invisible world that surrounds us all, a world we don't understand, a world that we wish to understand. And on Paranormal Horizons, we're going to explore this and hopefully get some answers. Good evening, everyone. I'm Jason Ophir, as always, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. I'm here with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry, how are you?
Pretty good, Jason. How are you?
Doing okay. Not a whole lot to report. It's been fairly uneventful life. How about yourself?
Well, I've just been busy, you know, readings and working out and just seeking balance. That's what I've been doing. Life has been wonderful. The weather is, wonderful, and I don't have anything to complain. It's been, you know, I feel very blessed.
Well, that's fantastic. I need to work out. We should get together, and then you can motivate me to get out and work out, get in shape.
We'll see what happens, Jason.
I don't think I can keep up with you.
Great. But anyway, I was going to say, I got to make a big announcement. Next week, we're going to have 4 special guests, and we're going to have, I can tell you right now, I can tell people because that way they can arrange it. We're going to have a 2-hour show. We're going to have the Halloween show. It's going to be coast to coast, not coast to coast, but ghost to ghost. And it's going to talk about ghost stories. We welcome listener call-ins and share your paranormal ghost stories or any questions about the paranormal or metaphysical. And we're going to have our guests talk about their frightening experiences firsthand with ghost encounters. And we're going to have number one is Joe Walling. And Joe is not only a personal friend of mine, but he is he's a partner in a group that I'm with. They're called Paranormal North Coast of British Columbia. I'm their remote viewer and psychic medium and their consultant with their team. And Joe is the founder and part of now TAPS. We're part of the big family, so we're playing in the big league as far as the paranormal field and the paranormal team. But Joe's going to join us next week, and then we're going to have Maria Wilson Duff, and we're going to have her friend Brooke. She's going to talk about her demonic experiences. That's pretty frightening. And also we're going to have Joe Panohu, which is from Hawaii. He's going to talk about hauntings and his experiences and what we need to know about the hauntings of Hawaii. So it's going to be a big show, and we're welcome to have these people spend some time. You guys are welcome to call in, share your experiences. So we're going to go a full length of 2 hours for Ghost to Ghost next week on Paranormal Horizons.
And if anybody wants to call on this show, you can call 215-383-3999. That's 215-383-3999. And we got a great show lined up tonight. One of my favorite guests, don't we, Sherry?
Barry Gaunt. He's very well renowned. He is with Kentucky MUFON, and also he is one of the lead investigators for Octagon Hall. Octagon Hall is very well known as the paranormal activity heavily with the Civil War and all these other history things. I'm not really a history buff, but I'm learning to be since I do readings on history and everything. But my understanding that they have a very well-known history with the war and people that's lived there, and it's just amazing. So Barry's going to be our guest tonight, and has he called in yet?
He sure has. We'll get him on right now.
Great.
Barry, how's it going?
Hey, Jason, how you doing today?
Doing all right. How are you?
Fantastic, my friend. Fantastic. Hi, Sherry. How are you?
Good. Very, very good. When I spoke to you this afternoon, I was at the gym.
Yeah. How's that going? Everything going good with that?
Oh, I'm doing really well. I'm just, you know, I'm just plugging along, and hopefully things are going to work out, but I'm just taking one day at a time. That's pretty much my goal, is to try and be the best person I can be and, you know, see what happens.
Well, there you go. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Barry, we got to set up a time for me to be on your show. I definitely want to do that.
I would love you to do that. I would love to have you on the show.
So I will
sometime in November. How about that?
All right, I'll get with you outside of tonight's show and let's get that set up, because it's been in the back of my mind, and it's something I want to do. So.
Oh well, excellent. I've been wanting you to be on for a while. And I'm really glad for that. So I look forward to hearing from you and setting you up on the show.
Sweet. So I understand we're just going to kind of hodgepodge it tonight and talk about whatever.
Yeah, whatever you'd like to talk about. We'll, Sherry mentioned Octagon Hall. We can talk about Octagon Hall. We're in our, currently right now, we're doing our major donation funding where we're offering novice tons every Friday and Saturday, and that's been super successful for us. We've been Fridays have been really good nights for us. We've averaged about 11 to 12 people per night, and then on Saturday nights every week we've sold out totally for those. We've had some great experiences at Octagon Hall, and it's been just a fantastic thing. Also, we can talk about UFOs. We're doing, we got MUFON out there. I'm also involved with the Kentucky UFO Research Center. Of course, I've got Night Stalkers Paranormal, and also Into the Far Radio Show. And hey, it sounds like you're going to have an excellent show next week for your Halloween show. I can't wait to call into that one.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting. Well, it's going to be our first Halloween show, and I thought, you know, I told Jason earlier, this would be wonderful if we can extend it for 2 hours and just do a big one, you know, because a lot of these shows, you know, you can talk coast to coast and everything, they're extending it for, you know, that Halloween is when the veil's thinnest, and so why not? Why have, you know, especially we're in the paranormal anyway, you know, you, me, and Jason, and you know, just have a blowout.
Yeah, it should be fun. We're gonna do a similar thing for ours on the 30th with Into the Far Radio. We're gonna be live at Octagon Hall Museum, Night Stalkers Paranormal, Melvin Brazel, Steve Miller, myself, Billy Bird, and we're gonna talk about ghosts and our experiences at the hall, and also we're going to go into UFOs. We've all had UFO experiences, so we're going to talk about our UFO experiences, and also strange creatures. So it should be really interesting, and I hope that's a successful show for you.
Now, you mentioned we're going to talk about Octagon Hall. That'd probably be a pretty good place to start. I don't recall any of the history with that. And for the benefit of the listeners, what is Octagon Hall?
Octagon Hall is actually a residence. It's in Franklin, Kentucky, and it is a museum currently right now. The foundation, Octagon Hall Foundation, has been in existence since 2001. What we are is a nonprofit that gets no money from the state or the government. And what we do is we have the house set up where you can come out and tour the house and the grounds. The foundation takes care of about 10 acres of land on the property. The property actually sits at 300 acres. And it's the home of Andrew Jackson Caldwell. Andrew was a very interesting guy. He was highly involved in the Masonic Lodge. He built an architectural wonder that he called Octagon Hall, and it's an eight-sided building. It's all brick. He actually reinforced it by putting three rows of bricks around it, and it sits off the road. It's just a beautiful place. It's one of those haunted places in the South. 9,000 Confederate soldiers were in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which used to be the capital of the Confederacy here in Kentucky, even though Kentucky was neutral. Most of the North was Union, and the southern area here in Bowling Green was all Confederate. And what the Confederates come under serious attack, not a battle, but actually the Union took the high ground and lobbed shell fire into Bowling Green for 3 days. The Union takes the Confederacy takes a lot of wounded at that time, and they decide, well, we're going to get out of Bowling Green. So what they did is they marched 20 miles south to towards Franklin, Kentucky, as they were going towards Tennessee. And they stopped at Andrew Jackson's home. 9,000 Confederate soldiers showed up there. A lot of them were wounded. They turned the house into a hospital. Unfortunately, a lot of the soldiers did not make it out of there. They got there, but unfortunately, because of the wounds and everything else, they were permanent residents from that point on and put into the ground there. After they decide to leave, after they leave the Octagon Hall, they split their forces and went to Shiloh and to Nashville. 2 days after they leave, the Union Army shows up there with 5,000 men, and they basically run roughshod over that area and really cause problems for the family. You can just imagine during war times, young men running loose and all kinds of terrible tragedies. When you talk about raping and pillaging, it doesn't even touch the what happened there. So there's not more tragedies there at the house. Also, the house has a lot of tragedy itself. When Andrew Jackson Caldwell's first wife, Elizabeth Akers Caldwell and Lizzie, actually passes at the age of 30. She bore them three children. The first one was Fanny, who happens to live to a great old age back then, about 89 years old. The second and the third child don't fare too well. Mary Elizabeth is downstairs in the winter kitchen, and while she was in the winter kitchen, she was either playing or cooking. We're not too sure about that. But embers come out of the fireplace and catch her dress on fire. And that was very popular back in those days because trying to heat the house, and that home has 10 fireplaces, so obviously they cut a lot of wood and a lot of it was green. They didn't have the screens and so forth like that to keep the embers from coming out, so she gets embers on her dress and she burns. She doesn't die right away. She lives in misery for 7 days and then passes. And then there's a young boy, Andrew Jackson Caldwell Jr., AJ as we call him, falls down the stairs, breaks his neck at 18 months, and he's also buried out there. So you can imagine the tragedy and the kind of things that are also in the hall. Octagon Hall is also built on limestone, a lot of limestones. Kentucky is known for its cave systems. We have a lot of cave systems under there. We have underwater a waterfront that runs underneath the Octagon Hall. And all those are so conducive to paranormal activity. And out in the land, there are magnetic ley lines, which also cause other extreme oddities. And we have been known to have UFO sightings on the property, strange creature sightings, and a whole plethora of other things. People have claimed to see portals open up and everything else. And some of the people that you're going to have on your show next week spent some time out there, and I'm sure they'll tell you one or two stories about the Octagon Hall as they're when they're talking about their experiences. A lot of people have had a lot of experiences, and boy, I'll tell you one thing, in October, and I don't know what it is with October, obviously it's Halloween, everybody talks about the veil for the paranormal lifting a little bit. It has really been aggressive this year, and a lot of people, we've had a lot of skeptics come to the hall this year in October, and they've all left going, holy cow, this place is haunted, and I now believe. So it's been very interesting.
What sort of activity are people reporting there? Like,
You can see, it's probably one of the greatest places to be able to see shadow figures. It's been known for shadow figures. You see, it's not only in the home, it's also all over the property. You see shadow figures. You can see there's what we consider to be a shapeshifter out there. People have seen some very odd objects. Sometimes he appears on all 2 feet, but he has the head of a bull. Sometimes he appears on all fours. Very scary type thing. There's been some reports of Bigfoot in the area. We have seen, as I mentioned, UFO activity out there. These portals seem to be opening up. A lot of people have seen the ground will turn a whitish blue, and then a column will appear out in the yard or out in the field behind the Octagon Hall. And that always is very interesting. Whenever you see something like that, you get that odd feeling that, geez, I don't want to be out there standing there when that thing opens up. And then
it sounds like regardless of whatever your paranormal interest is, you can just go to Octagon Hall and see it all. It's like the triple threat of the paranormal.
Oh, it actually is. It actually is. And, you know, it's also set very close. It's the latitude of it. Latitude is on the 37th parallel. It's 36.5, so it's very close to that. As we know, the 37th parallel, that line that goes all over the world, is known for odd paranormal activity, UFO activity, and so forth. So it's nice. We see full-body apparitions, disembodied voices. It is just a paranormal haven, if you will.
What? I don't think I would have the guts to go there on Halloween with all that sort of activity. I don't know. Which brings up the interesting point. I mean, what are the risks? I mean, we've talked to a lot of people, and I'm sure we've talked to you before regarding the risk of the paranormal. We've talked to people that have attachments and stuff like that. Is anybody that's going to Octagon Hall, have they ever had any issues after they've left there with some, you know, potential spiritual attachments or curses or anything like that?
Well, that's an interesting question, and I'm glad you brought that topic up. One of the things in the paranormal that we try to preach, that I personally preach a lot, is there's a lot of teams out there who do the TV and everything else. They get their selves together. They want to start going to these haunted locations, trying to say, let's try to experience some paranormal. And what you find immediately is when you go there, that there's it can be a serious problem for you. Unfortunately, TV kind of glorifies it and makes it look a little bit easy, but it actually is not. It's probably one of the most dangerous fields you want to get into because of the fact of what you were saying, that yes, it is 100% true. You can get attachments, as you're working with this. You can go into a building. They can go home with you. They can cause havoc at your house and everything else. And that's why when we always leave a property, we always do a clearing and tell them that stay there and everything else. But, we have had a lot of people take home. They talk about taking home maybe Mary Elizabeth, a soldier, or something like that. And even the people who have been in the field a long time, when you're dealing with these evil, we don't have a lot of malevolence. Yeah, there are some nasty people in there. I hate the word demon. So many damn people use that word. That is ridiculous because of the fact that there are not that many. There are demons out there, but when people don't understand that, they're just like normal people. I mean, we're all souls. When your energy is there, it's no different because of the fact that when you're sitting in a haunted location, you got to remember that you're dealing with people that are intelligent. It's normally an intelligent haunt. It's not a residual type haunt. It's a very intelligent haunt. These people respond to you. And what they are human beings. And when you look at them from that point of view, you can say, look, there's some nice people out there. And sometimes if there is someone who you remind somebody, possibly you look similar to somebody that they lived in their life. At that point, if it was a good person, great. If it was a bad person, they're going to go, oh, man, I hate this person. I'm going to make it rough on them. So, and also, excuse my language, one of the things we always talk about is if you happen to be an asshole in life, I can guarantee you, you're going to be an asshole in death. And those people will cause all kinds of problems. They can be very nasty. But these people are all automatically converting them into, demons, demonic, and all this stuff. And that's just not true. It's just like people looking at shadow figures. They take a shadow figure and they go, it's a dark entity. It's a terrible thing. No, it's not. I mean, I guarantee you, paranormal doesn't even know what a shadow figure is. And as we've talked to many investigators over the past, and of course we do it on the radio show and everything else, and we've been blessed to be able to spend 42 years in this field. And as we find out with shadow figures, it's not that, it may possibly be. Some of the feelings that I've gotten from other investigators, it's just an entity that does not have the power or the energy to be able to fully manifest. So what it does is it appears it's the easiest thing it can do, and it will look like a shadow figure. People talk about seeing them in their homes and everything else. And, oh my gosh, I saw this terrible black entity. Well, that doesn't mean it's a demon. And half the big catchphrase these years, this for the last few years for the TV is, I want to be a demonologist. Good luck with that. There are demons, and I will be very truthful with you. If you happen to run into a demon, which I don't think most people have had the experience to, you will find out really quickly that they are the most dangerous things in the world, and they can personally harm you or even kill you.
So, Barry, I got a question for you. How do you know from your end or your experience, and maybe you can talk about that next week when you call in, how would you know that you have encountered a demon, or do you know that there's a demon in a place that you're at, whether it's at a location that you're investigating or just in a place, whether it's Octagon Hall, a home, or anything? What are the things that us listeners can get from you? You can see if it's a demon or not.
One of the things that you've seen now, and I'll tell you, I've been doing it for 42 years. I've had three demonic incidents. There's all different kinds of entities. There are unhuman entities. There are sprites, anything that you can imagine out there. There's gin. There's all kinds of different types of entities throughout the paranormal that are out there. Some of them can be tricksters and very mean. Now, when you talk about the demonic energy, the power that a demonic has is 10 times what a normal paranormal ghost will do. You got to remember something: the power that these things have, it takes a lot of energy. So they are looking for energy to be able to fully manifest. They're looking for energy to be able to continue doing whatever they want to do. And when you're talking about a demon, you know, that's what it goes. Can you imagine the energy it would take to move a cup across the table or throw something across the wall? Yes, you can. Ghosts can do that. That spirit entity has enough power that can manifest it. So maybe you're talking maybe 3 pounds, it would be 3 pounds. Well, when you talk about demons, demons have an abnormal amount of strength. They can cause all kinds of problems. So they have the ability that, you know, I'm not the smallest guy in the world. I'm 6'6", 265 pounds. And when I was younger, first demon encounter I had, I was actually picked up off the ground and thrown about 30 feet in the air into a wall. And a normal spirit doesn't have that kind of energy. A demonic does. They are out there to hurt you and to they don't like you. I mean, they have an agenda. And that agenda is to destroy.
How can you tell it was a demon? I mean, besides being thrown, did you have any indication when you went inside that there was something wrong or something that was off or anything like that? Or were you told that beforehand? How did you know?
It's just like you know, and you deal with the paranormal and everything else, okay? And you advise teams, and you are a seer, all right? And you go out and everything else. And as well as you know, demonics have certain types of qualities, and you can pick it up. You know, a paranormal investigator goes out and they start investigating. All right. The research that goes into paranormal is extensive. You research your home, you research everything else. All right. Now, so when you get into this area, when you're in a home and you're starting to do the research, and, you know, all your research is done beforehand, the investigation ends up being maybe 15% of the whole case. Because of the fact that that's when you're going to go to the house and find out and determine what you're going to have. You're going to be listening to all your evidence. You're going to be able to do that. And believe me, you know, and you know it the same thing as I know. It's very, demonics are extremely rare. And at the same time, when you are dealing with a demonic, it will tell you you're going to have, your person is going to be, they can become in a first-class position, a second-class position, or even a third-class position. They can leave extreme marks. If you are talking about the Lord, anything else, you're going to feel immediately that they're going to be rejecting that. So there's a lot of things that go into it. And, you know, I'll be very truthful with you. I don't care. I mean, I may go into a house and say, geez, I think that's a demonic entity, and we will try to work it out and clear it out. You know, and we clear a lot of homes out. And I've heard other shows that you've done where you're talking about cleansing and cleaning a house. You know, it's all the things that you prepare to do to be able to find it. Demons are exactly what they are. Some of them have names, some of them will actually tell you names, but at the same time, you have to remember that when you're dealing with the paranormal, it is also very rough to be able to know that these things are tricksters. What is the best thing of a ghost? You're going to go into a house, you're going to do an EVP, you're going to be, which is electronic voice phenomena, you're going to be sitting there and you're going to be doing your stuff, and or you open up your ghost box or whatever you're going to use, and you're going to get an obelisk, you name it, and the word demon is going to come across. Okay? Now, does that mean it's a demon? Heck no. What it means is what's the most thing, if you're trying to be, you don't want to be bothered, and you want to throw crap out at somebody, and you want to get them scared, what are you going to say to them? Hey, I'm a demon.
Exactly.
So are the obvious, are they accurate in your mind as an investigator, Barry?
They're a very interesting tool. And I have seen some interesting things as far as obelisks are concerned. One of the things is how you originally use it. An obelisk runs on so many words in the dictionary that's put into it. Some people say, oh, yeah, there's special keywords that do pop up, and that is possible. But at the same time, there's a way to use it. When you first start it up, we normally ignore the first 5 minutes of anything that's spitting out because it has to be inside the room. It has to get acclimated to the room, and it's picking up those frequencies and everything else that change. And when it does, it is actually reading out, it's picking out a name or whatever it's going to say. Now, when you put them all together and you string it together, I have been in places that will be the replies on an obelisk go exactly with the questions that you're asking. And it will start telling you a story. So when you go back to it, it has. And then I've also seen the obelisk just totally go apple, orange, Toledo, you know, and that kind of stuff. it's everything. There is not a perfect thing. That's as far as equipment is concerned. And, in fact, that's one of the things that a few of the colleagues that I've been dealing with here in the past 2 months are always looking to develop newer equipment and a better way to be able to do it where, like yourself, Sherry, wouldn't it be great if we could monitor the human response also, especially on a psychic or anyone else, that will be able to tell what their how their feelings are, what that is that allows them to see that. You're in a home. The changes in ionics, the changes in barometric pressure, the changes of anything, you know, EMF, all of the things that are around in our area that no one studies. I mean, and the key factor is to be able to truly become more scientific. You know, our deal is if you want to prove something in this world nowadays, it has to be admissible. You know, Jason Klepp, you wrote the book Admissible, and it is a very good thing. I mean, because of the fact that when you are sitting down and you are putting a case together, it is nothing but a story until you put the evidence to it. You know, the more evidence you have that is that can make a case solid, makes that no longer a story, but it makes it proof that there's paranormal activity happening or a UFO sighting or whatever.
That's exactly like I was trained in interview and interrogation. And the way they train you is to detect, you know, things your body does that you're not aware of. And it's the same kind of thing when you're detecting deception. You're kind of taking a cluster of everything you're observing. It's not just one thing. And that's the proper way to do an investigation. You got to look at the whole story. But I had a question. Has the obvious,
sure,
the ovulus in every instance spewed out any verifiable information through the history of a location? Like if you knew the person that died was named Vanessa or whatever, has that ever been confirmed through the ovulus where it says a name that's actually tied to the history of a place?
Exactly. It has actually done that. And that's where you always have to be careful with it because you are using this kind of equipment. And as I mentioned, Jason, when you're doing investigation, and first of all, you have your research because you've got to know what the history of the place is. You just don't go in there and start investigating like you see half these weekend warriors or some of the people that are armchair investigators. you have to have the background so you know what kind of questions you're going to ask, what you're going to do. It's very detailed in the correct way to be able to do a paranormal investigation or any investigation that you're doing. You know, you have to do your research first. So when the ovulist starts spewing out these names and everything else, you know, it stores how the names that it picks up. And as it puts this story together, and we also have to remember, a lot of spirits, that's what they want to do. They have a story. They're very proud of, it's like an Octane Hall, they're very proud of what they did at Octane Hall. And they want to hear, and they want people to know their stories. And it's the investigator's job to be able to verify that the story they're telling is true. Because we also know that during the paranormal, it is very, these things can be tricksters, lie to you, do everything else imaginable. You know, there's nothing, you know, it's some of them are very misleading. Mm-hmm. But that's where the research comes in. And to answer your question, yes, 100%. I have seen it talk about the history. I've seen it tell that story on several occasions. And in other times, I've also seen a novelist just go off the wall where there's nothing that really pertains to it. But you have to remember, you're going to be asking it questions. And as you're doing it, it's just like anything. You're probing, and it is giving you, all of a sudden, when it gets an answer or the energy is correct, and it puts that voice or that name in there, that's what you have to know. Does it relate to what you're talking about and how to use the equipment? You know, you just can't sit it there and just go, oh, geez, it just said Philadelphia. It just said, you know, it can say anything. And I think you understand where I'm coming from with that. But, yeah, I mean, it is a useful thing. Any type of equipment is useful, but at the same time, you have to have the knowledge of, one, how to use it, and two, how much weight you're going to put behind that evidence.
Now, we do have a caller. Are you open to take any questions this evening?
Oh, I'd love to.
All right. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this?
Hi, this is Tony.
Hey, Tony.
Tony,
the show.
How are you?
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. I really appreciate it. Really,
Tony,
actually,
where are you
very,
from?
San Diego.
Okay, thank you for calling in.
Yeah, I had some questions because I've my family and I have experienced some, I guess we can say paranormal activity in our home. And just recently, about two nights ago, we happened to record some of the activity. And what we believe to be activity. Now, being that you people are pretty well versed when it comes to, how do I say, maybe you would be able to kind of weed out whether or not this is something that would be something of concern, or something of, you know, that maybe it's just something other than paranormal activity. If you don't mind, I would like to play it for you.
That's fine.
Sure, go ahead.
Please do.
All right, I muted Tony. I don't know if he was serious or not. It was obviously a prank, or at least it was to me. So, yeah, and he hung up. So.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that we...
Yeah, it's amusing.
You know,
it doesn't bother me.
It doesn't bother me either, because it actually tells a story. And here's the story that it will tell. One, which may help a lot of people. If you think you're having paranormal activity in your home, the worst thing that you can do, and a lot of people, they see TV, they get out there and they go, oh, geez, I want to buy a ghost box and I'm going to try it out in my home. and I'm going to do EVP work in my home. Worst thing that you can do. You know, paranormal investigators do not go into their house and start playing around with their equipment, because what we're actually doing is opening a vessel for someone to be able to communicate with us. You know, take a dead person, for instance. Say you've been dead for 200 years, you're underneath your house or whatever, and all of a sudden you open a way to communicate with you, whether it be Ouija boards, whether it be the ghost box, whether it be EVPs, and you're asking questions and you're playing it back. Well, when you get the opportunity to speak to somebody and you haven't talked to them, you're going to want to talk more. You're going to want to be more active. And I will be very truthful with you on that side. You're going to also be telling everybody else, hey, I got somebody. I got a way that I can communicate here. Come on over here. You know, and the next thing you're going to have is you're going to have paranormal, real paranormal activity coming in your house. If you're going to do this kind of stuff, and you or you think you have activity in it, find a good paranormal team that is vetted, that are professionals, that are going to do research, that are going to come into your home. Not one of these teams that come in, spend the night, see you later, goodbye. You know, when we do an investigation, and when you're there, you're going to be, one, you go for your pre-investigations, and you look at the house, and you may take recorders through it as you're looking at it. Then you're going to plan your investigation the next time. Then after you review your evidence and anything else, you're going to go back again to make sure you verify that. And then you're going to make the determination to how to help this individual. Is a cleansing needed? Do I need to get the clergy involved? Do I need to get some of these other things involved? Or is it best for you to understand the best way to take care of this is by you taking control of your situation? If it's an intelligent haunt, you can sit down and talk to them and be able to say, look, this is my home. You know, it may be your home. We can live together if it's possible. If not, then you have to do it under my rules. And I don't want to hear this from you. I don't want to hear that from you. I don't want to see these things anymore, and put your foot down and do it. I mean, it can be as simple as that, you know. But, you know, when you start playing around in your own home, you're opening up everything else imaginable. And any investigator that's out there that's worth their salt is going to tell you the same thing I just did. You know, do not play around with this stuff, because it opens a way for communication in the future.
How do you feel about tarot cards, when people do tarot cards?
You know, there are people that do readings, they do all kinds of different stuff. You know, it's like numerology, anything like this. Okay, when you're talking about the paranormal, you're looking at everything else. You know, it's how the person uses it, how it does it. The tarot cards, you're not actually bringing a spirit aboard. What you're doing is picking out a card, your energy is doing it, someone's reading a thing to you about a tarot card and predicting your future or the things that are going on currently. We can take a look at everything and say, oh, geez, you can't do that, you can't do this, you can't do that. Basically, what I'm saying is you don't want to take the risk of going into your own home. I mean, and I'm going to be honest with you, Sherry, and everybody out there knows it. There's paranormal that knows me. Maria Duff knows it. Everybody, you don't go around and you don't, I mean, to me personally, I have spirits. And yes, I've brought spirits home with me, and I have things that go on. And you also know that. And people have called here, and I'll hear them talking in the back with me. We deal with those, some of them are here, but I do not personally operate any device here in my home. When I had someone else investigate it, Steve Miller, who is now part of Night Stalkers Paranormal, he also runs Evermore Paranormal, a great investigator. I had him come to my house, and I had him do it. know, and he says, wow, you got this, and you got this, and you got this, and I let him do an investigation. It's not for me to do. I don't want to have open communication with them here all the time. They're here anyway.
Now, we do have multiple callers. I'm 90% sure it's a crank caller storm. It's up to you if you want to roll the dice. Want to answer?
All right. Sure, I'd love
it. It's so amusing. Caller, you're live on Paranormal Horizons. Who's this?
Hi, this is Mike from New York. I've called in before. Don't worry, I'm not a troll.
Okay. Hey, Mike.
But I'll tell you, I've heard that guy with the whistle on a couple of other shows. I guess that's their new game, and then they have a bunch of them to call in. So glad you're aware of their game.
No, it's been a while.
But I just wanted to comment and thank the guest. I mean, it was a very interesting show. I was the one that called in before and spoke to you, but I collect World War II militaria. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, right, right.
A while back.
Yeah, sure did.
Yep, and I've got a room full of collected war souvenirs for over 50 years, and some people telling me to be careful. There's residual energy in my room, and remember, and we were discussing that, if the possibility is that if that could be true or not. And I always thought about it, about inviting somebody that could sense it or somebody would know how to handle it to see if that was a fact, if that is the case. And because I remember someone had a show where they mentioned even going into an antique shop, somebody that's receptive and could sense it, could actually sense a connection between different things in antique shops, different items. And I was wondering if you'd ever run into that.
Mike, that's a great question. I appreciate that question. It is very true. And yes, we have run across that. There are possessions that people adore, and for some reason they attach they're attached to it, you know. And they go with it, and when you bring it back into your home, what are you doing? You're bringing them with you, you know. And you can, but those items can also be cleansed and taken care of. Other items, there's items throughout this country in paranormal museums that are known that to have attachments and to have problems, and they will have them and come in and be blessed. They'll have them do everything imaginable to them to keep them under control and not to cause problems. We had one here not too long ago we were investigating, and there was a wonderful old chest and mirror, and this lady, instead of putting it in a Bible or anything else, wrote on the back of her mirror everything that happened in their life, all the births, all the deaths, and everything else. And
wow.
That thing had... she was definitely attached to it. It was significant to her. That had energy attached to it. And you can have the ability to be able to cleanse that and to be able to take that spirit away from it and make it safe and everything else. You know, you don't have to totally remove it. I know our good friend John Zaffis, haunted collector, has removed him. He has a great museum. Some of the things, once they're removed from a home, the problem all ceases. You know, but there's other different ways that you can also try to be able to before you have to remove it from your house.
Would these be the whole spirit itself would have a connection, or it would come with you, or just some of the energy or negative or positive energy you'd end up with?
Some of them have the spirits have, you know, it's just like this. If you have a possession that you adore and love, that means more than anything to you in the whole world. You're going to be attached to that, just like anything else. And that's where the total word attachment comes out of it. You know, and yes, your energy is can be all over that because of the fact, I mean, just like a residual energy, you mentioned residual. Residual is nothing more than something that has the ability to record. Say if you're on limestone or anything else, and you were walking, let's say, here in my house, I walk down the hallway every night, going back and forth to bed and everything else. I pass away. The house is sold four times. 50 years from now, someone is sitting here, and all of a sudden, just like a tape recorder or a video machine, something trips, and it releases that energy. And what you're going to see is you're going to see me walk down the hallway. You may see me personally. I will not even know you're there. All it is residual haunt, where it is me doing something from the past that I did every day. I'm not talking to you intelligently. I don't even know you exist. I'm not even going to look at you, but you're going to see that image, and that's what we consider to be a residual haunt.
That's interesting. It was on a collector's forum, an international forum, and we were all discussing our, I've got a room that's full of everything, German, Japanese, helmets, swords, rifles, you name it, medals, documents, flags.
Oh, yeah.
50 years of set it up. And Richard Kimmel, I don't know if you ever heard of him, he wrote a book about haunted history, or saying that our items are. And Kimmel tried telling me, Mike, I want you to put a tape recorder in the middle of your room and leave it recording all night, and in the morning you're going to hear voices. And I told him, I said, Richard, with all due respect, the last thing I need is Nazi, Amityville Nazi room with levitating swords and daggers. Thank you very much.
Right, and, exactly.
I said, if that happens and I see Hitler's mustache floating in the middle of the air, I'll start collecting Beanie Babies. But I... you know, it's the last thing anybody would want. But I always, I mean, it's never, in all the years, it's never, I've never seen anything that would tip me off to it. I mean, nothing outrageous or, but I always wondered about that in the back of my mind, that there was negative energy.
Yeah, you know, we have, we were talking earlier tonight about Octagon Hall Museum. It is a museum. And believe me, we have a lot of Civil War paraphernalia there that is being used and is on either loan or is there in the museum. And I will tell you that there are certain things there at the house. We have a thing on Jerome Maurice Clark, which was known as the She-Devil, or another name he didn't like to use was, he didn't like very much, was Sue Mundy. And we have his gun there and everything else. And I will guarantee you that there are probably more than a handful, 50, 60 investigative teams that have been in there, and they have gotten stuff on or from Jerome Clark, because he comes and looks at his original gun. It's there, and he used and he killed a lot of people with it, you know. So I mean, that's just the way that it is. Now, it doesn't mean he's there all the time. Doesn't mean it happens. He's just coming back to check up on it, you know, and say, oh geez, it's great to be able to see that. I love that gun, that weapon. So, you know, that's the way that it is.
So how do you find out, maybe for that, also for the listener that's on call right now, how can you tell for listeners, what's between a residual haunt and a current haunting?
Well, like we talked about the residual thing, as I gave you the example last time, a residual is nothing but energy that is released. Now, when you're talking about the other part of the haunt is an intelligent haunt. An intelligent haunt is one that can interact with you. All right. Now, when you're dealing with interactions, that's what we deal with as paranormal investigators all the time. We ask questions, and they will give you the correct answer. They will do things for you. One of the stories that I tell very much is a lot of intelligent haunting in Octagon Hall. We used to do a big event where we had a haunted house where we tour the museum, we put actors in it, They would try to give you a thrill, but at the same time, we told you the history of the hall, some of the things that we saw, and they would recreate them. And also, the spirits would also join in and do other things. But I was there doing a video because I used to sit outside the tent, and I would give about a 20-minute presentation before you walk in the house, some of the things about the house and the history of the house. And I'm making a video, and I made it. I made a new one every year because of the fact of all the evidence that we were capturing there at the home. We wanted it to stay current. And one day I walk in, and it's just me in the house. I'm working on video, and I just talk to the spirits there at the house, and I said, "Hey, do me a favor. I'm working on this new video. Jump in front of a camera. Do something and tell me you did it." About 5 minutes later, as I'm sitting there doing my work, I hear upstairs, we have some bells up there, little bells that you would ring, that were used by the wounded in case they needed something or whatever. They would ring a bell, and someone would come in and give them assistance. So all of a sudden, I hear a bell ring. It's just one of those ding, 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 ding. And as I'm sitting there, I went, "Wow, that was weird." And then all of a sudden, I hear footsteps. And the hall is three stories, and I was in the main floor, and there was one above it and one below it. And the stairway has a banister and a guard going around it in certain areas. And it seemed like you could almost hear those footsteps walk right up to that area. And I imagined it kind of like him leaning over. And in a disembodied voice, Sherry, I heard him say, "Could you hear that?"
Wow.
And at that time, what he did, an intelligent aunt, what he did is he heard me say, "Do something and let me know you did it." What does he do? He does something and asks me if I heard that. That's an intelligent haunt.
Well, I'm looking at the clock here. We're about out of time. I want to thank Mike for listening and calling into the show this evening. We appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. My pleasure. Very informative. Great show.
Right. Thank you.
Please call in anytime. Thank you. We're going to have a special next week, Mike.
And Barry, I want to thank you for coming on this evening, and it's always great talking to you.
Jason, I enjoyed tremendously, and I thank you for the opportunity to come on and be able to talk and be able to give out information and possibly help others. That's what we're here for, and that's what good paranormal investigators do. And I appreciate the opportunity. And Sherry, it was wonderful talking to you again tonight. And I wish you all the best. Jason and I will be talking to you soon.
Yes.
So we can set you up on a show because I'm very excited about that. And if you are, for the people who are out there looking for more information about the Ocular Hall, or if you're a paranormal team that would like to come visit the hall and do that, the hall is available for rental 365 days a week. The minimum charge is $300 for a paranormal team to come there, up to six people. After that, it's $50 per person. You can find it on our website at OctagonHallMuseum.com. And you can also go to Facebook underneath Octagon Hall Museum. YouTube is filled with several teams and other things else that have been there and have put videos out and so forth. And you can follow us on Night Stalkers Paranormal. You can listen to the show Into the Far Radio on Blog Talk Radio. You can also report UFOs at Kentucky UFO Research Center or through MUFON, MUFON.com. And we'll be doing, we'll get you all taken care of.
That's great.
Outstanding.
Thank you, Barry, for coming on. We'll have you back again soon.
Oh, it was a pleasure, Sherry, and thank you, and I look forward to that.
All right. Thanks, Barry. So, Sherry, next week that's going to be the big show, right?
Yes, that's going to be the Halloween show. And, I just want to tell everybody, Barry Gaunt's been with us since I started on radio, and it's always a pleasure to have him. He's a wealth of knowledge, and it's amazing to have him on the show. So I look forward to personally having him back, and he's just really a good person. So, but, yes, I'm looking forward to next week, and anybody can call in. Even Barry can call in. Let's have it. And let's have just a lot of interaction of stories, experiences, advice. Let's go and talk about ghost-to-ghost stories or whatever. So we're going to, like I said, extend it for 2 hours, and please do come and listen and participate. Just call in at 1-215-383-3989, and we will start at 8 o'clock Pacific time.
Outstanding. Well, I hope everybody has a safe week, and we'll see everybody next week, 8 p.m. I'm going to do something a little bit different tonight, Sherry. I'm feeling sprightly, so I'm going to close the show with something pre-Halloween. How's that sound?
Yay!
All right. Hope everybody has a great week, and we'll see everybody next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Take care, everybody. Peace.
Like cat's eyes. As Jim Brand lay dying, his wife left him with his nurse and went into the next room to rest. She sat in the dark, staring into the night. Suddenly, Mrs. Brand saw headlights come rapidly up the driveway. Oh, no, she thought. I don't want visitors now, not now. But it wasn't a car bringing a visitor. It was an old hearse with maybe a half dozen small men hanging from the sides. At least that's what it looked like. The hearse screeched to a stop. The men jumped off and stared up at her, their eyes glowing with a soft yellow light, like cat's eyes. She watched with horror as they disappeared into the house. An instant later, they were back, lifting something into the hearse. Then they drove off at high speed, wheels squealing, the gravel in the driveway flying in all directions. At that moment, the nurse came in to say that Jim Brand had died.
Good night, everyone.